Daydream Believers with Elle and Elle.
Hey.
How are you, Elle?
I'm well. Elle? Slight tummy ache today.
Me too.
I can't stop. My tummy has been killing me.
I had a very sore tummy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I know why though.
Oh, how come?
Because I had a packet of yogurt. You saw me eat it today. You saw me eat yogurt today.
I saw you eat eggs. Were you eating eggs with the yogurt?
No. While we were at the computer, I remember I was like, Elle, do you want anything? And you're like, no.
I was wondering what
you were
doing.
I made myself some yogurt.
I never even saw you eat that yogurt.
I was right next to you eating it.
It was delicious. I was so in the zone of emailing.
It was so good. But anyway, I looked at the date.
Oh.
Do you remember I asked you the date?
Oh my God, yeah. You asked me the date and I said,
hey, slow your roll. Don't go reacting before I say what
Please.
The date was.
Oh, I'm worried though.
It was a week old.
Old?
No, I'm joking. Oh. No. It expired today.
Nah, I wouldn't have touched it.
Nah, I trust it because it hadn't been opened yet.
Not opened yet.
So no
yet.
Air had gotten inside.
That's
so I'm
fair.
Thinking, I'm in the clear. How Aussie did I just say?
Yeah. I'm in the clear. So interesting.
Yes.
But yeah, so you felt instantly unwell since then?
About an hour later. I was like, oh, this is not good.
It's crawling.
This is not good. And that's it.
Not good. Oh, see, I'm one of those people that is very particular with my expired. Like, if something is even close to being expired, it is a no-go for me.
Even close?
Close. Like, if, like, you know how there's, so mum always buys the milks that, like, long life milk, right?
Gotcha.
But long life milk, it lasts a long time if you don't open it.
Yeah, that's right.
But like once you open
then
it,
you have
to
consume it within 5 days.
Yeah, you have to
correct,
eat it within five
correct.
Days. Eat
no.
it, drink it within 5 days.
Yes, eat it.
And mum puts the dates on it.
If
usually.
It's after 5 days, then you'll have to eat it.
Yeah. But my sister will be like, oh yeah, well, no, we opened it on this day, like, so you've got until tomorrow. And I'm like, nah, not touch it. And I'll literally smell it. And even if it smells fine to everyone else, in my head, the smell is very different.
Ah.
And I'm like, nope. I don't know why. I'm
maybe
just one of the. I'm very pedantic about. No, even when I was a kid, like, I remember, I think actually maybe this might have been the first instance. And then after that, I've just been very iffy on foods that are not their regular style. You know, when McDonald's, and I feel like I haven't had the experience in a while, but at Macca's when I was a child, I swear sometimes when you would bite into a nugget, there'd be like a random nugget that would have like this little black worm looking thing in it. It happened to me so many times, and this one time that it happened in particular, it made me feel so icky and gross that I think I've hated, like, the idea of anything being expired or anything being tainted, like potatoes that have the green part, nah. Potatoes that are a little bit, like, have a black part on them that are a little bit overly burnt, nah. Like, I just feel like everything is, like, I'm too scared to eat them.
Right.
Or consume anything like that. So if I see an expiry date that's even, like, a day before, I'm like, nah.
Ah, see, if I do, I'm like, score!
Yeah. I have friends that are obsessed with expired food. Not obsessed, but, like, they'll go out of their way to, like, oh, it saves me money buying the expired food because I know they're still good. I'm like, they're not still good. They're not.
I think it depends on the item. Mm. Anything dairy?
No.
Any meat?
Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm.
Breads?
Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. So everything. Like, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe, like, crackers.
Even fruits. If I have a banana and it's got a bruise, I ain't eating the whole banana.
Oh,
usually
I'll
cut off that whole second half of the banana, for example.
I'll still eat the bruise. Oh my God, she actually dry reached.
Oh, I can't do it. Even when I look at a mango and it has too many bruises on the outside, I'm like, can't even open that mango now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm really bad. It's like
a So you're a food waster.
I've always been a food waster, yes.
You're one of those.
I don't waste it entirely. Usually someone else will eat it after me.
Okay, yeah.
I always have someone around that will. Yeah, someone around me will always recycle the food for me through their own mouth.
That's where you'd put it.
I took a long way to get into, like, someone else just eats it after me.
How can you describe something in the longest possible way? That's what you just did.
I feel like that's how I do everything.
All right, we're going to do things a bit differently.
Yeah.
Now that we are back doing an episode with just us.
Yay!
Wahoo!
Woohoo!
We thought instead of doing the long intros, the formalities, etc., and then you gotta wait like half an hour before the actual topic starts, we're just gonna start the topic now.
Yeah.
What an epiphany that we had. So the plan is we're gonna do the topic now, then pause for formalities.
Yeah, like a little break of
like
formalities.
Like a break. And then get back to the topic. How's that sound to you, Elle?
I'm a bit worried. I'm very in depth on topics, so I'm like, am I going to be too in the zone for the topic and then I will get out of the zone, then in the zone? I'm confused.
I don't think so. Let's just see how we go.
We'll see how we roll.
We're just trying things out.
I like it.
Mm. It's nice to have a break.
I think so too.
For a bit of music talk, you know?
Yeah, I always think so.
All right, so anxiety is our choice of topic today.
Yeah, anxiety. We actually had someone send us a message asking for this specific topic and just talking about like anxiety and not just generalized anxiety, but anxiety, panic attacks, the full-blown feelings
hardcore.
Of anxiety. Yeah, hardcore anxiety that like...
Hardcore?
To my core. It shakes me to my core. Yeah, that kind of anxiety.
Yes, that kind of anxiety. We also did a... What did we do on Instagram stories?
A poll.
Mm-hmm. And anxiety won. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
So clearly a lot of you are anxious. Let's talk about it.
Me too.
Okay. I feel like I have experienced many different forms of anxieties throughout my life.
Yeah. I would say the same.
Many, many different. And I'm going to say the most recent that's took over my life a little bit was postnatal anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
That one really took a toll on me.
Yeah, I can only imagine what that would have felt like.
Yeah, that one really took a toll. That one involves obsessing over sleep schedules, obsessing over what he eats, and that's still something like I have trouble with, and also just fear, so much fear around anything happening to the baby to the point where I would get a lot of intrusive thoughts about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Intrusive thoughts is definitely something I want to talk about in this episode because they're very overwhelming when you have an anxiety disorder.
So overwhelming. Like, I remember when I was at the prime of my postpartum anxiety, I'm going to say I envisioned my son accidentally being dropped, him not breathing throughout the night. That was a big one.
Mm.
Me accidentally, like, I don't know, just doing something. I'd be walking down steps and I'd visualize me dropping him while I'm walking down the steps. Like, and the intrusive thoughts felt so real. It's like in my mind's eye, the visuals were so strong that it's like I was actually seeing it in real life.
Yeah.
And it was to the point where, I don't know if you get this feeling where if you see something that maybe would hurt someone, it makes your body ache.
Mm.
I would get those aches from
the physical sensation. Yeah. Even though it's like not something happening right there in front of you.
Yeah.
It feels so real because that's the thing. If you haven't experienced intrusive thoughts before, some people have to some degrees, like we all get a sort of intrusive thought. Intrusive thoughts are usually unwanted thoughts.
Mm.
And they usually kind of, especially in my experience, they come for the things that you like love and care about the most of the time. For me, I get that same sort of feeling. I get very intrusive thought that is paired with visualizations a lot of the time, and that is paired with sensations in my body, which sort of almost make it feel even more real. It's like you're watching a 3D movie, or even 4D, when like, you know, you went to watch Shrek when you were
kid and you like got wet,
Queensland, you get wet and it sprays on you. It feels like every sensory moment you have is part of that anxiety. It makes it feel so fucking real. I know you've suffered from postpartum depression as well as postpartum anxiety. Like, were they always kind of paired together?
Oh, most definitely. Having the anxiety made me really down, and because I was so obsessed over certain things, I found that I lost myself through the anxiety. So then I found myself at an identity loss that a lot of women experience. But through that identity loss, because I was so obsessed over these certain things, that's where my depression really kind of manifested.
Mm.
On top of that, you throw in COVID, you throw in lockdowns. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. It was just a mixture of spicy thoughts.
When your brain is ruminating like that, it's... Like, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, we've spoken about on the podcast before, but like intrusive thoughts are very common in that and very like intense. Or like, I was at one point experiencing well over like majority of my day was
intrusive thoughts. So hard.
And so, it's difficult, but it's the ruminating with my anxiety disorder, your brain kind of gets stuck in a loop. And I think it's very similar, like I've heard it's very similar with postpartum anxiety as well. Like, you've got that intrusive thought and it's playing almost as a loop in your brain, and even if it's moved on to a different thought, it's still in a loop. It's the central theme of it is still in this ruminating loop over and over again, and it can kind of feel debilitating to some degree. especially because, I guess, in postpartum perspective, because you're focusing solely on something else or someone else and their safety and their health and their well-being, to the point where it's taking a toll on your own.
Yeah.
And you actually can't do anything about your own because you're so focused on theirs, that it's going to kind of bring you down to this space of like having a identity crisis. And even though I don't have a child and I didn't suffer from postpartum depression or anything like that with my OCD, when it first hit its peak, then I definitely noticed a similar sort of, I would say it was a little bit of an identity crisis as well, because once I got diagnosed and I was realizing how much of my day and how much of these thoughts were actually not even my own, really. Mm. They're just unwanted thoughts that were popping into my head all the time, all these fears and irrational fears, in quotation marks, but at the same time, like, very real fears to me, were taking over my life so much, to the point where I actually used to question to my psychologist, like, what is me and what is the disorder? And I still question that sometimes. Like, what is me? Like, what do I even do that is me anymore? What do I think that is actually my thought anymore? What do I fear that is actually my fear anymore, that's not taken over by this anxiety disorder? And when you're stuck in that ruminating pattern, you're checking things, or you're checking things, like in my scenario, checking things, making sure everything is locked, making sure everything is safe, making sure I do all my compulsions and do all my rituals, it becomes so exhausting mentally and physically that you can't help but feel this overwhelming, like would be depression, like this overwhelming need to just be exhausted and just allow yourself to be exhausted, to the point where you actually don't care about what your well-being or what your life is going to be
and
like anymore.
Yeah, it's when the depressive symptoms really come into play. Like, the biggest one for me was really struggling to get out of bed. That one was a really tough one.
Yeah.
And it was tough to deal with in my case, because I had to get out of bed.
Yeah, you've got a child,
Yeah. But I remember getting out of bed and being so, so tired. And it wasn't even because, I'm like, of course I had sleep deprivation when he was a baby, but even throughout his life, I'd be so tired waking up that it'd feel like I'd have like sand hanging off me.
I feel the same way. I've found out my reasoning for why I feel like that more in days that I don't realize is anxiety driven, is because of my ADHD and executive dysfunction. But in the times when my OCD and my anxiety were at its highest, it was like next level no dopamine in my body, next level no serotonin. Like, it felt like, I remember when I was in uni, I actually had this as a note to write the thing, so thank you for mentioning this.
That's,
but like,
all right.
In uni, when I first finished high school, it was like the first time I didn't have like the boundaries of school to keep me in check. So I would have my intrusive thoughts happening all the time during high school. The anxiety was always there, but I masked it really well. And I was, well, at least I thought I did it really well. I probably looked like a crazy person. Like, I had hair picking problems. So I would like pull out my hair in class and like check in the corner and click like three times. Like, it's a joke, but it was serious. But like at school, at least the social anxiety aspect of it overtook how much the intrusive thoughts could kind of take control of me, at least during the day at school, and they could kind of distract me a little bit. Whereas at home, and when I was in uni and I had days off and no one else was home, it was like, sit in bed, moment I wake up, intrusive thoughts. Even while I'm sleeping, intrusive thoughts. Moment before I couldn't go to sleep. I didn't go to sleep till like 4:30 most nights of my life, and even now sometimes, because of intrusive thoughts. Because I'm sitting there constantly in this state of pure anxiety sometimes. Like, it definitely does feel the same way. It felt in that period of time, especially in 2013, that was like intense for me. I would literally just sit in bed the whole entire day, some days having the most intense panic attacks over just a thought I had. Just sitting there and freaking out. And if I could not do my compulsions from my OCD correctly, or if mum got home or my sister got home and they interrupted me during my compulsion, it was like, and it kept happening. It got to a point where it'd be like a mental episode, and I actually am in such a state of panic and my brain is racing so, so, so much, couldn't even break down. Mm. Like, I was at a point where I was functioning but not functioning at all. I was living but not living at all. Like, I was stuck in my house. I was too scared to leave my house because I knew if I had to leave my house, I'd have anxiety the moment I got to my front door because then I'd have to lock everything and I would have to touch everything a certain amount of times. I wouldn't shower because I knew I had to touch touch certain parts of the bathroom so many times.
So you just end up in this consistent
loop. Yeah. A lot of people don't have proper understanding of OCD, and if you don't or you haven't really heard about it properly, we have a whole episode about it.
Yes, we do.
So please go back to that where I kind of share a bit more of my story with it. But and we do have a whole episode about postpartum depression, which you guys should go listen to as well. When you are experiencing OCD, it might look funny to other people. It might look like, oh, you're knocking on something three times, or you make a certain noise like here or there, or you check things a lot of times, or you check the car keys, like you've got the car keys every 5 seconds. But there's a reason why you're doing that. Yeah. And that reason you're doing that, at least in my experience, is because of obsessive thoughts, those ruminating intrusive thoughts, and can feel so real and feel so, it feels almost like a, like something, it's your own voice essentially, right? But it feels so external to you that it feels like a constant actual, someone is actually sitting there threatening you every single second of the day. And I can imagine that was similar to what you were feeling as well with postpartum anxiety. It's like with those intrusive thoughts, it's almost like this constant threat of this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And in my case for OCD, it's like, this is going to happen if you don't do this. This is going to happen if this. What if this happens, then this is going to happen.
What do your panic attacks look like? Because I not only have experienced them myself, but I've experienced them by watching other people. And I find it with everyone I've known that's had it and I've seen it is all different.
Yeah, I've had the same experience. Very different. I have some people experience it very differently to me. And sometimes I was having panic attacks and I didn't actually know that they were panic attacks. When I was a child, and this is like from the time I was like maybe grade 3, grade 4, I would be at school and I would get these insane chest pains, like almost in my sternum area. And I literally would be in my class and feeling like, oh my God, this is like the movies, like my whole body, I'm dying. And I'll go to the teacher being like, I've got like a really, my pain, like I've got really bad chest pain. And this would happen almost, at one point it was happening like every second, third week, up until like year 9 maybe. For years this was happening and I kept getting this, and it kept getting worse as the years kept going on. And mum had taken me to the doctors, I remember, when I was in primary school experiencing it. And they were just saying to me, oh, it's just sternum pain. Like, you're all fine. Like, you've just got some sternum pain. Like, it's nothing to be serious about, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, like, whatever. So I just, every time it would happen at school, then I stopped going to the sick bay and stuff. And I just was like, oh, it's just that pain. I'll just suck it up. Like, I'd be like that. But when I say these chest pains were, like, really bad. Yeah. Like, it was, like, to a point where, like, my heart racing, head spinning, like, freaking out, blood, like, red face. And I'd be in class being like, can't tell the teacher because okay, she's going to be like, oh, again. So I was just keep to myself in pain. I can imagine it looking like from the outside, you know, that meme of that guy that's, like, choking like this and his face is really red. There's, like this guy. I can imagine if that was me just holding it all in. But by the time I got to high school, I remember that at the end of year 7, I had really, like, I always have had really bad social anxiety. By the end of year 7, it was really bad. I remember in this one science class, I got it really, really badly. And I went to sick bay and I had to get my grandma to come pick me up. And then we ended up going to the doctors again. And the following year, I found out that it was actually anxiety attacks. Like, I was just having actual panic attacks.
So how did you come to the realization that it was a panic attack? Who told you?
The doctors were explaining it to me. And I've spoken to psychologists since then. Like, it's literally my whole body was just, like, in an actual state of panic. And it was like, referencing it to chest pains. And it makes sense because at the times, it would usually happen after a moment where I was so overwhelmed with panic. And this is before I had obsessive, like, I obviously had obsessive compulsive disorder, but before it had been diagnosed and before it was escalated. But this is when I was just experiencing generalized, like, social anxiety. It would usually happen after a moment where I would be so caught up in panic about, like, having to do something, like having to talk in front of the class, or those situations in school and primary school, especially for a girl that was like me, where you had to go around the class and say something about yourself or answer a question. You all had to go around a circle. They brought me so much anxiety as a child. Wow. And not just like, oh yeah, she's shy, like so much anxiety. Yeah. I was having like full panic attacks and just trying to like hold it in and freaking out. And then after those situations would pass, maybe like 5-10 minutes later, that's when I would get those insane chest pains.
Wow.
And like it made sense because it was happening. It was like my body afterwards was still trying to be in fight or flight the whole time and trying to like calm itself down to, because we had just experienced something in my brain as like threat.
Yeah.
Everything felt like, for me as a kid, everything felt like a threat. Mm. Everything felt like it was danger, danger, danger. And not because it was like, back then it wasn't because it was physical danger or like safety. It was like me in social situations was danger. Me in social situations, I'm not going to, like, I'm panic. It freaked me the fuck out.
Right.
And that's why I find it, every time I see a teacher like ask those questions in class, I'm always just like, pay attention to the little girl that just doesn't want to speak and just don't do it for her because it's really hard. Aww. It never pushed me out of my comfort zone. It never made me feel any better any single time up until I was in university doing those. It never made me feel better. It never made me feel like that was getting the confidence out of me and experiencing what it's like to think, because, and obviously me knowing I have ADHD now, it makes sense that like I just never felt like I was going to be understood even if I answered it correctly. Yeah, I found that like that approach to helping someone through their anxiety and getting someone out of their shell when they've got an anxiety disorder or any type of disorder, like a mental health disorder, sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't help, and it's not helpful sometimes. Sometimes it brings you further into the anxiety and further into your shell, in my experience anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually feel scarred from some of those situations. Wow. Like the fact
just that, like, they're pretty like in the grand scheme of things, pretty simple scenarios.
Yeah. Pretty simple. Like literally going around the classroom and saying a word that starts with the letter of your first name.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, just thinking like, oh my God, I don't know any words that start with E. And I'm like, why can I not think of, and the panic would be so intense, and the lead up to the next person and the next person and the next person and the next person. Like, I cannot explain to you the fear I experienced. And even now, and I know that it was so intense for me back then, because even as a 28-year-old now, some nights I go to sleep and that's what I think about. Like, those scenarios before I go to sleep, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I go back to that zone, that feeling. It's really, I don't hope someone else feels like this, but I really hope someone else does, because I couldn't have been the only kid that was that terrified at the time.
I'm sure there's someone else out there.
Yeah.
At least one person.
Surely one. Come to me. Be my friend.
Help me.
What about for yourself?
I'm going to say that I never really experienced panic attacks until a little bit later in life. I don't think I really had them as a kid, especially in the circumstances that you talk about. Like, I always got nervous when it came to talking in front of the class or having to introduce myself, but I got through it,
yeah.
You know, without it being too much in my head. I'm going to say, I think it was probably after I got married.
Mm.
That's when I really started to notice these things that would happen from time to time, and even now they don't happen very often, but they happen like sporadically.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's more like kind of paralyzing, and more I just go silent and then I can't really say anything. That's more mine. And I also find that sometimes if I'm in a state where I'm crying and I'm trying to talk to my husband, for example, about what's going on, I find that because his way of showing love is by touch, I find sometimes that when I'm in that state, if he goes to touch me, it will ignite a panic attack because I don't want to be touched in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of act like the start of it before I go into that paralyzed state where I just kind of can't talk or anything. The start of it feels like I've got like bugs on me.
Oh, like crawling from the bottom?
Like something's crawling on me. And that's if it gets ignited by someone touching me at a particular moment that I do not want to be touched.
Yeah.
And when I'm feeling a bit frazzled and I'm in a state where I'm crying a lot and I'm talking about what's going on and, you know, and it's got to be a pretty heavy scenario. Like I've got to be I've got to be sobbing.
Yeah.
But if someone goes to touch me, it freaks me out, and then it sets me off into one of those episodes.
Yeah, it like changes your whole like nervous system to some degree. I've experienced that a little bit before too.
Yeah.
I feel like when you say paralyzing, that's sort of how I feel sometimes too as an adult when I'm experiencing it. I had a scenario in an airport last year where I had experienced an anxiety attack, and for me, I've never usually when I'm feeling insane anxiety, like when I'm overwhelmed, it goes into like look what looks to be like a nervous breakdown,
yeah,
rather than an anxiety attack. It always, yeah, as an adult, it sort of looks more like an explosive, like emotional brain. I physically will get to a point where I'm going to be dead honest, punching myself in the head because I want the thoughts to be out of my head. And that's happened many times. I've had to do a lot of therapy around that to try and get to a phase where I'm not using self-harm essentially to deal with an overwhelming brain. But when I went through that scenario in the airport last year, I experienced the paralyzed feeling almost the same. Like, it felt like my whole body had something within it and I was jiggling.
Yeah.
Like, my body was shaking so uncontrollably to the point where I've never been that shaken. But my mouth and I couldn't do anything but cry in that moment. And anytime that someone tried to touch me or a security guard kind of came up to me, I was like even more, like everything just escalated.
Everything heightened and heightened and heightened.
It was, I find that I usually get that way when I've tried everything I can to sort of calm myself in that situation and nothing's working. And I'll either usually start feeling as though like, oh my God, it's like one of those dreams where you're screaming and no one can hear you.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's when I'll get into that kind of frame of mind where I actually like, I'm not in a place where anyone's going to understand me or work out what I'm trying to say. So I'm just going to be, I'm not even aware of it in that moment, but it's like I've just got to be still and quiet and hold it all in for myself. In those moments when I feel in a safer mood or when I'm around people I feel safer with is the moments where I end up going explosive anxiety attack. And I would say that they are anxiety attacks or nervous breakdowns to some extent where I am fully in, it almost looks like I've got insane outrage. It's crazy how much like our mind and our body are connected and how much like what you said before, like someone can just touch you in a moment of you feeling a certain type of anxiety or stress in within your body, and that physical touch adds that element that was maybe missing beforehand, and it just makes the whole body and the whole mind kind of link into this big state of actual panic.
It's very interesting how it can affect different people. Like I have witnessed someone have an anxiety attack where it's very a lot of screaming involved.
Yeah.
And a lot of like heavy breathing, a lot of like heart palpitations. And that always freaked me out. That always scared me witnessing that. And I think that would be in the moment where, like, I don't think I've experienced that where all I can do is scream.
Yeah.
I've never experienced that kind of anxiety before. But when I was watching that person scream their lungs out, and they literally could not do anything else, that was quite unnerving.
Unfortunately, I've been in one of those situations before, and it's so, like, I don't know if they experienced it the same way as I did, but from my in my experience, like, it's almost as if I blacked out in those moments. I was not aware of, all I was aware of was that I need to get these thoughts out of my head. I need to get, like, I want to be removed from my brain right now and my body right now. And it's like, you're like, for me, it feels like I'm screaming or I'm hitting something or I'm like in that stage of like mental breakdown because I've got nothing left. Like I've got, I can't, like it's so overwhelming that I can't like do anything but scream.
A show that depicts dealing with anxiety really well. And Elle, I don't think you've actually watched it, but it's Ted Lasso.
Oh, I've only watched that one episode with you.
What can I say about that show? They deal with anxiety so freaking well and what it can do to a person. So Ted, he starts to get a tingling feeling in his fingers.
Yeah.
And then he just blacks out.
Yeah.
Like he goes and he's basically on the verge of passing out. He'll be somewhere. He'll be in a crowd. And one episode they were doing karaoke.
Yeah.
And something just, one of the songs just triggered something in his brain and he started getting tingling feeling in his fingers. And the way they did it, I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah,
the
even way, I have goosebumps.
The way they did it for the show was amazing because they had this like sound that started.
Oh my God, why does it feel like that actually happens sometimes?
Yeah. And he ran out and he was like, couldn't see, didn't know where he was going, and he went outside and was just like hyperventilating and stuff. And the way they deal with it in that show, Elle, and the way he deals with going to therapy, Oh,
I need to watch this
properly. You have to watch it.
Once I finish Boy Meets World. Oh, God, why? I'm nearly done. I've only got like 10 episodes left.
I've been watching it for like 5 years.
I know, but I'm nearly finished. I've got 10 episodes left. But that's really like, you've won me over. That's definitely on the list.
If you have not seen Ted Lasso, but you want a window into what anxiety can be like for certain people, or you just want to feel related to in a show, Ted Lasso, beautiful. I mean, like, it's also about soccer, which is awesome. And it's also about all that really cool stuff. But, oh, my God, the character Ted is the most perfectly written character I've ever witnessed in television.
I love that so much. I feel like that is very hard. Like, I'm trying to think of any other movie that has ever, or TV show that's ever made me feel that,
like, scene anxiety-wise. Think about it. I mean, I can't think of examples, but a lot of the depictions in film are people just going,
or breathing into a bag. And I'm like, that's not realistic for me.
And it's not, and it's short-lived, and afterwards they're okay.
Yeah, or it's just looked at like, oh, that crazy nerdy girl at school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas you can have these panic attacks, and just because you start to breathe normally at one point doesn't mean that it's actually over for you in your brain.
No.
Yeah. Just to reiterate, Ted Lasso, go freaking watch it. It's amazing.
No, oh, I need to watch.
Yes, it's a very,
I'm very
good
excited to watch that.
Yeah. Elle, shall we take a break for formalities?
I think we should.
We shall. All right. So what we like to do for formalities is tell you what was number one in music history this week that the episode comes out.
Hoo-ah.
Do you know what that is, Elle? Hoo-ah.
Sounds familiar.
Hoo-ah. It's, what's his name? Al Pacino.
Oh.
And Scent of a Woman.
Oh, I love that movie. He does do that. Yes, I remember now.
Hoo-ah. He's so suave.
That movie is so good.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed that.
It's a great movie. Oh, I always wanted to dance with him in the restaurant.
Oh.
I've always wanted, like, a man like Al Pacino to come up to me and be like, want to dance? And I'll be like, hey, yeah. And then he gets up and we do this fancy, like, tango-like dance. And all of a sudden, I can dance. And he just wins my heart. But it's not in a, like, grooming kind of way. And it's like, this girl is just gorgeous.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yes, it would.
I feel like, I get what you mean, though. Like, I always thought that, like, somehow someone would ask me to dance, like, salsa style. And suddenly my body would just know what to do because they're such a good lead.
Yes. But the thing is, I'm terrible at letting the person lead because I'm so stiff.
Like, relax.
I remember my father-in-law, because he can dance.
Mm-hmm.
He went to dance with me, like, during a Frank Sinatra song at my wedding, and he's like, you're gonna let me lead? I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, Dad. Luckily, when I danced with my dad, we both had no idea what we're doing, so we're both just like
back and forth sway. It's an easy move. Or like spin in a circle slowly.
Anyway.
Yes.
All right. In 1962, Sherry by the Four Seasons was number one.
Sherry. Sherry, baby, Sherry. I always listen to that in the car.
Yes.
I used to have like a USB I made with only 60s and 50s music. That was the first song on it. Sherry. So I was listening to that specific song in the car a lot.
That reminds me of my shower CD. Oh, it was always Promiscuous Girl that played first.
It's just hilarious. Every time you say it, I just think of you with a loofah.
That's how I was. And I cannot disassociate Promiscuous Girl with a shower. I hear it and I'm like, I need a shower.
That's a good technique to get you to go have a shower.
I should just tell my husband to play the song and I'm like, oh shit, I have a shower. I shower, by the way. The same as you, Elle, right?
I know, yes, it's the same as me.
It is you. Admit it.
It's me as well.
Okay. I'm starting to sweat. I'm starting to hyperventilate. I'm having one of those movie panic attacks. I need the paper bag. Okay. This is a very interesting fact.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the song was originally called Terry?
What?
Terry, baby. Apparently the group loved it and performed it over the telephone for their producer, Bob Crewe, who liked everything about it but the name. They considered Jackie.
No, it doesn't work.
Jackie. After Jackie Kennedy.
Mm.
and also considered Perry.
Oh, yeah.
So Perry, that would have worked okay.
That would have worked okay, yeah.
That would have worked okay. That was after a record label that Crew had a stake in. Uh-huh. But ultimately, they ended up on Sherry after Sherry Spector, the daughter of one of the Crew's best friends, a DJ named Jack Spector. Reminds me of Max Power, then.
Yeah.
Max Power. He's the name that you want to touch, but you mustn't touch. His name sounds good in your ear, but when you say it, you mustn't fear. Because his name can be said by anyone. Ah, Max Power.
Max Power.
That's just the best. I could just go through the whole scene. I'll probably edit most of that out.
Nah, I think keep it all.
I have to keep it.
Like, ah, Max Power.
So yes, Jack Spector.
Jack Spector.
He was a DJ. Never heard of him.
Never have heard.
Neither have heard I.
Interesting. I'm surprised it was Terry to start off with as
Terry.
Well.
Terry works, I think.
Yeah, I think Terry works, Perry works, but I think Sherry just really, yeah. The sh was really nice in a song.
It's maybe because it's just what we're used to, though.
Yeah, perhaps. Crazy that they had to call up on a phone and, like, pitch
that's
that.
How I was back then.
That's so
friend.
Cool.
That's how I was back then.
I you like
got
that.
You got the ring dial.
Yeah.
Kriching, kriching.
These are good sounds for that.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, listen, we got some songs for you.
Someone was over with the board where they had to unplug it and plug it somewhere else.
Oh.
Do you know
oh
those?
Oh, my God, I didn't even think
Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Like in, what's the movie? John Wick.
Oh, I still haven't watched John Wick.
Oh, hell. John Wick people know
yes,
what I'm talking
everyone
about.
Else has watched
Switchboards.
That
That's what
Switchboards,
I meant.
Yeah.
Switchboards. Anyway. In 1999, Unpretty by TLC was number one.
Oh, you can print your snails if you say it so. Ah, I like that song. I actually saw TLC live last year at R&B
Did
Fridays.
You?
Yeah. Obviously,
forgive
only the
me.
Two.
Forgive me. Did one of them die?
Yes. One okay. of them has passed.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was really, really good to see the two of them. So this song received 2 Grammy nominations.
Uh-huh.
And lost to Santana for both of them.
What?
I know. I was like, I feel like we've had someone else lose to Santana before as well. On the podcast.
I don't know. I just feel like we've been talking about Santana a lot
so
lately.
So much lately. But
because he's sexy.
He's sexy. But oh, yeah, because we spoke about him with Nickelback the other day. That's why. Oh, bloody Nickelback. I love you.
I don't even know if Santana's actually sexy. I don't remember what he looks like.
He's like got, he always is like with the guitar. And
he just said, the name Santana, the hair, the guitar just seems sexy.
Yeah, Santana's a good name.
Shakshay.
Nomination for Song of the Year, which lost to Smooth by Santana and Rob Thomas, which to be fair, love that song.
Love
can understand.
Song. Love that song.
And then Best Pop Performance by a Duo, which lost to Maria Maria by Santana.
Maria,
reminds me of a West Side Story. I think that's the one.
I have no idea what just happened.
You know that song? Maria, Maria.
Is that from West Side Story?
Reminds me of a West... That's the song. Reminds me of a West Side Story.
I thought you were saying that that song reminds you of West Side Story. And I'm like, that's in West Side Story?
No, the name, I think the name Maria is from West Side Story.
I remember Jack and Willow Grace is like, Maria, I just met a girl named Maria.
I remember that too, actually. Yep.
Oh. It's the only experience I have with West Side Story.
I haven't watched it either. T-Boz wrote the lyrics, and apparently she wrote them during a really challenging time of her life. And she actually didn't think that anyone would be able to relate to them. The lyrics are essentially like about like feeling unpretty and like, you can try all the makeup that man can make, but, like, if you don't look inside of you, like, you won't find that you're pretty too, kind of. I just quoted the song. But,
yes.
But, like, essentially, like, it's just talking about how we can feel sometimes as women that, like, we have to keep trying on new stuff and changing our appearance and changing our body shape and everything like that to sort of fit into the social norm. And we're focusing on all these external factors, but, like, we also have to look internally and, like, love ourselves regardless of any of that. And it was in a moment she wrote this song when she was feeling pretty frail and she had lost a lot of weight. She just wasn't feeling great about herself. And her partner like went out and she didn't have the courage to kind of ask. Like she didn't feel like she should have had to ask him to stay at home with her.
Mm.
And so she wrote the song in like that moment of downness and like wrote the song in like that moment of like really feeling like essentially unpretty. And like didn't expect anyone to relate to it.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane because almost every female can relate to that song.
Yeah.
If not, every other person as well. I think Evan Kalia did an actual cover of it as well.
Did he? In 2015, Can't Feel My Face by The Weeknd was number one.
I wouldn't mind going to his concert. Apparently he's coming.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, in a couple months, maybe 2 months. I'm curious, but I feel like it'll be expensive, the tickets.
That's what I was just about to say. I don't know if I'd want to pay up that much for him.
I feel like personally. I've heard really, really good things. Yeah. Obviously, Emily Jeffries, that was on our podcast last week, she loves him. And I think that's actually what's made me really want to go to the concert. Yeah. But it's at quite a big stadium here, Marvel Stadium.
Oh.
And I just know that whatever seat I will be able to afford will be make him this tiny bit big.
Yeah, and the sound quality is not the best. Marvel.
Yeah, it's not the best there.
I saw Bon Jovi there and it sucked. But I was also at like the last seat at the very back.
Mm.
But the sound was hard. You couldn't hear him.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll get tickets the week before and see if they've changed the prices.
Yeah.
But
good idea. I was actually surprised when I read his name that I didn't know his name.
Oh, you didn't know his name was Abel?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, really?
I knew. He was just always The Weeknd.
Yeah. And I always got confused because it's like not spelt like weekend. It's spelt with the N-D instead of E-N-D.
Weekend.
Weekend.
It's like saying he's weakened.
He's weakened in the knees.
He was weakened. No. Yeah. Mm. Or is it meant to be more like The Weeknd?
I think more like The Weeknd, but
yeah,
interesting fella.
Hmm.
He's very interesting, that man. Like, he seems so talented, like, and like he seems like a very creative person.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
His music videos, that whole prosthetic face thing he has going on recently.
Yeah,
like I feel like he's just got a very big visualization.
Yeah, very mysterious. It's cool.
Very mysterious. Very, very.
Yeah,
quiet.
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
The music video is interesting. Have you seen it?
I can't remember it, actually.
It's basically about how he's performing in, like, this club and it's, like, very smoky and then no one's interested. And then someone lights a cigarette, they flick it, he gets set on fire, and then that's what makes everyone start dancing again.
Oh, my God, I do remember this now, yes.
Yeah, I always thought that was interesting.
I wonder what that's, like, meant to signify. Like, yeah.
Like, you have to maybe be a spectacle for you to be watched instead of just having good talent.
Yeah, very good point.
That's just what came off the top of my head now.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool thing to come off the top of your head.
Oh, well, I ain't just a pretty face, you know what I'm saying?
No, I'm saying. That's what I mean. I feel like he really knows how to perform and how to, like,
make it really like an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one reason why I would go. His songs are extremely catchy and you can tell that they're well thought out and, you know, they're good songs. They're just not ones that appear in my playlist.
Yeah, it's a different type of music. For me, I find it interesting because I like his music.
Mm.
The one song that I've been stuck on is Save Your Tears.
Ariana Grande, yes.
I watch that music, like the live performance of it, so often.
Yes.
And I really like the lyrics to that song as well. But okay. Yeah, in terms of
the lyrics.
In terms of like actually being in my... Him being like one of my top artists, it's definitely unfortunately not there, but that's just because we both have just completely different music tastes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There was his first number one song. He had three previous top 10 hits. Love Me Harder with Ariana Grande, Earned It, and The Hills.
I forget he did Love Me Harder with her. He's done a few with Ariana.
Shall we move on to musician's birthday?
Please.
What we like to do is to pretty much tell you a musician's birthday. And then you can tell us if you share that birthday with that musician. Oh my God, I just realized we're very similar age.
Anyway, I know. I saw that before. I was like, what?
All right. So if you were born on the 4th of July, the birthday of America.
America.
You share a birthday with Post Malone.
So cool.
I love him.
Me too.
I actually love him.
I really, really like him. I love all of his music. His concert when he was performing with Red Hot Chili Peppers was fantastic. It was just him on I think a Marvel Stadium as well, but just him like with nothing in the background, just him like singing.
That's all you need.
And he was just so amazing.
Oh, sounded so cool.
He just looks like he's something about his smile is just so infectious.
It's so true. And he seems so, every time I watch him on an interview with Jimmy Fallon or Conan or even the Hot Wings, he seems so respectful. Mm. He calls everyone sir.
Yeah.
And that's enough for me.
That's so cute.
I love him.
Yeah, he's such a sweetie.
Yeah.
Do you know his name is Austin Richard?
Austin?
Yeah. Austin Richard Post.
Austin.
Austin.
I love that name, Austin.
I see it now, but like I didn't see it to begin with. And blows my mind that he was born the same year as us.
I know. 1995. I feel like I just don't. whenever there's someone who's a celebrity, I just can't picture them being younger than me or same age or younger, unless it's like a teen star.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, because even for me right now, like, if I think about, like, I have no clue how old Justin Bieber is, but like, I assume he is somewhat around our age. But if he is younger than us or the same age as us, I find that odd and incredibly crazy, because like, that means I did have a chance.
Oh my God. He's 1 year older than us.
That means we did have a chance.
We had a chance.
Not that I ever really liked the Bieber that much. But it was like
such a baby at the time.
Yeah, I just felt like back then when you were younger, like, you know how like everyone's pining over the Bieber. You don't think that anyone has a chance because you still think of him as like, I just thought of every celebrity back then as just like way older than us or way younger than us. I never thought of anyone even in the same like 3 year gap.
That's hard. I always felt like someone like Justin Bieber would just always seems too young.
Yeah.
Too young for me.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know what I'm curious about now that we're talking about different celebrity birthdays? Just quickly now. I'm really curious how old Tom Holland is.
Me too.
Shall we do guesses? I think he's younger than us. Yeah, I think he's 26.
Ooh, I'm going to say 24. I might be so wrong.
I don't think he's that young. I don't think he's that young. Hang on, let's see. Oh my God, he's 27.
27? Oh, so he's like a year below us.
Yeah, 1996.
Wow.
So interesting.
So interesting indeed. Because that makes sense. Zendaya would be the same age as him, yeah? Are they still together?
Yeah, I think so.
Because Zendaya was in like that TV show on Disney Channel when I was in high school.
Yeah, and she had that really catchy song.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's also 1996, so she's...
Which is crazy because when I was in high school and I was watching like Shake It Off and all them things, right, because I still watch Disney Channel as basically an adult. To me, because I was watching Disney Channel and like they were like the new generation of Disney Channel, I just assumed they were way younger than
me.
Yeah,
that's right.
But in my head, Hilary Duff was the same age as me, and Hilary Duff is not the same age as me.
No, she's not.
Like, bizarre.
Like Miranda Cosgrove.
Yeah, what? How old is she?
I don't know. She's
someone where I actually think she may be our age.
Very interesting. By the way, Timothy Chalamet is 27 as well.
Well, I thought he was way younger.
No, he is 27.
I can't believe he's dating Kylie Jenner if that's...
Kylie Jenner.
I know. They suit, kind of.
They kind of suit. I kind of get it. I don't know.
I sort of see it too. He's very cute.
Oh, she's 30. Get out. She's not older than us.
No, iCarly is not that much older than us.
1993. Also, only a few days before me.
Wow, when I was watching her back on Drake and Josh days, why did I feel so much older than her?
I don't know.
You just assume that you're the same age as the main characters,
I suppose.
Maybe
because a lot of the times we're watching reruns. So we're a bit older, they're still at the same age, the same age, the same
age. The same age, the same age.
Okay, wow. Well, there you go.
That is wild.
Yes. That was a nice little deep dive into celebrity birthdays.
I know, I feel like I keep going, but we can't.
We can't.
We'll be back to anxiety talk.
All right, let's go back to anxiety. One thing that I want to talk about, a certain type of anxiety that I know a lot of people would have experienced, is PTSD.
Yeah.
And I haven't experienced it to the full lengths that potentially people could be experiencing it. But I had a small taste of it. Was it last year? It wasn't even last year. It was the year before.
Far out. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was nearly 2 years ago in December. I crashed my car into the gate. But the way it happened was I drove home. I was actually really sick at the time as well. I just dropped off my son with my mother-in-law. She gave me a bowl of soup. She didn't have any container, so she just gave it to me in a bowl with Glad wrap.
Yeah.
And she's like, be careful, take this home and have the soup. And I'm like, perfect. I got home and during the drive, it had spilled all over in the car. Yes,
even that's
not
just giving
fun.
Anxiety.
I know. It was very bad. And because when I got into the driveway, I was like, I forgot to put the car in park and with no handbrake. So I got out of the car, but I still had the key in the ignition. When I went back I cleaned the bowl and everything. When I went back to get my keys, not realizing that my car wasn't in park and I didn't have the handbrake up, as soon as I pulled the key out, the car started rolling. And I've got a little bit of a hill when it comes, not much,
driveway,
but enough for my car to start rolling back. And in an instant, all I could think to myself that my son was in the car.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't.
Yes, but I forgot he wasn't in the car.
He wasn't in the car. So in a flash, Elle, I visualized my son being in the car and that I had to jump and try and pull the handbrake up. Stupid mistake. I should just let the car roll. But it just, I don't know why I thought he was in the car.
Just to be safe, yeah.
So I dived for the car to try and pull the handbrake up, but I couldn't reach it. So the car was dragging me with it. And I could feel my legs getting dragged on the concrete. I let go and my face was getting dragged on the concrete as well. And in that instant, I thought I was going to die because I thought my head was going to go under the tire.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I thought, no, this is it. Like I had the life flashing before my eyes. I had the this is it moment within the matter of seconds. And then all of a sudden the car was gone. And then I watched it hit the gate.
Yeah.
Stupid how it happened. But it happened nonetheless. I blame it on me being really sick at the time.
Yeah.
For weeks after, I couldn't get out of my head the thought of my head getting run over.
Yeah, fuck.
And I spoke a lot with my therapist about it and she really helped me through it. Even though it's been nearly 2 years, sometimes I still get the intrusive thought of my head getting run over by the car. And like what could have been.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I 100% get what you mean.
That's like my small taste of...
Yeah, it's like a flashback moment.
It's just very flashback moments.
Yeah.
Of what could... Not of what happened and how it happened, but what could have happened. And it probably... Like, I'm trying to think about it logically. How can that have happened when I was getting dragged next to the car, not under the car?
Yeah.
But in the moment, that's what I thought was happening. Yeah, my mind believed it. My mind believed that that's what was going to happen, even though my head wasn't near the tire.
I think that's something that I struggle with as well. Like, not struggle with, but, like, I notice with anxiety as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be realistic, but the fact that you even got in that position in the first place was just so unrealistic to you a couple of moments before that, that anything was possible in that moment.
Anything
you know what I mean?
Was possible. And my mind truly believed that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So even what was happening was traumatic enough.
Yeah.
I find that that's a really big thing. Like, it's just the thought of something that's happening to you that you never expected to ever happen to you in your entire life, or you just never thought was possible in that moment, that sometimes can set off so many anxiety thoughts, like, and intrusive thoughts, just because you've witnessed something that you didn't think was actually could happen in real life. And after that, it's this sense of, like, this fear of the lack of control, the lack of, like, being able to know what's going to happen next and being able to kind of, like, be able to foresee what's going to happen and the safety that you're going to have in the future. The anxiety can sometimes leech to that. Like, I know in my circumstance, like, it leeches to that, and it makes everything feel like, even if it is unrealistic to everyone else, it feels so realistic to you because you're like, well, no, I've witnessed things that seemed unrealistic before happen, so I know that the unrealistic thing can still happen.
And I think what helped me in that scenario was just I had to keep reiterating to myself, and I had to write it down that it did not happen. It did not happen. It did not happen.
Oh, you wrote it down.
Yeah, I had to, because it was in all kind of ways that someone can learn something, whether it's hearing it, feeling it, looking at it, you know, reading it. Had to tell myself in every way to basically get all of my senses, like, to believe that it did not happen. And that was kind of how I got over the original thoughts of it, and how I started to believe, well, it didn't happen. So what's the point of thinking about what could have happened?
Yeah, you, like, retrained your neural pathway.
Yeah, so I had to really – yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I had to really retrain my brain, but it still sticks with me sometimes, I have noticed.
Yeah. I think it's only
I get random flashbacks of, like, ugh.
Yeah.
But they're short-lived, which is good. Yeah.
It's wild what the brain can attach itself to, right?
Yeah, dude.
I learned, like, with my OCD, I learned that, like, there's, like, an element to it that it's – that, like, in studies that they've done, that, like, an OCD brain struggles to differentiate between what is, like, safe and what is unsafe. And so that's why the thoughts have such a hold over you, is because you will never believe, you can't fully believe that it is ever safe.
Mm.
And like reading that and like learning about it a little bit more, it makes so much sense to me why. So exposure therapy is a type of therapy that you do for a lot of anxiety, but mainly with OCD, it's very helpful. And so it's like, okay, if I don't do my compulsion today, then I can see that like this, the thing I'm fearful of right now is not going to actually happen. And then that's going to, and you'd think that you doing that enough times is going to show you, hey, this, like, show the intrusive thought, essentially, like, look, no, it's not happening. See, it's not happening. Like, I don't have to keep doing the compulsion. And a lot of the time that does help and it makes it a little bit more manageable. In my experience, though, sometimes that will help up until a point, and then I'm very aware that I have to manually do that all the time. Mm. And with OCD as well, like, that means that in that scenario, like, I'm very aware that, like, I still don't feel safe.
Mm.
Like, the intrusive thought doesn't go away. It's a chronic illness. So, like, the intrusive thought doesn't go away. The thought pattern still is there because my brain technically still thinks it's unsafe.
Mm.
But I manually have to tell myself it's safe all the time, over and over and over again. It's just wild to me how easily, I guess, a brain like mine and, like, the chemical imbalances and the gray matter and all that stuff, how much the reality of what's in here does not match reality outside. It blows really my mind each time. And it blows my mind to try and like explain to someone else, because like, especially when I'm having such an irrational thought and irrational fear and I'm in a state of panic, or I'm really like not like I'm really emotive in that moment about it, trying to explain it to someone else and get them to fully understand is really difficult. And to some degree, it just looks as all, because I'm doing compulsions with my OCD, it comes across as almost a nuisance to the people around me. And that adds even more layers of like anxiety, because they don't understand like why I'm like,
you're aware of them being like, oh, come on now.
Yeah. And like, it's not only the anxiety of the intrusive thoughts I'm receiving then, it's also then the social aspect of it and the social anxiety that hits. And then it's the rejection anxiety of like, oh my God, like I'm pissing off my mom right now. I'm pissing off my partner right now. Like, I'm obviously a nuisance. I'm a burden to everyone. And then those types of thoughts start playing around. It's just extremely overwhelming. And if you have someone in your life, like if you are someone that's struggling with this kind of stuff, we love you and we hope that you're doing things that help you feel at least that 5% better each day, because we know how hard it can be. But if you're someone as well that has someone that's struggling with an anxiety disorder in your life right now, like, please be gentle with them and please take the time to, like, just try and hear what they have to say. Even if you can't experience it yourself or you don't really understand what they're saying, like, it means so much of the world when someone truly tries to just let someone be and let them just speak and understand them and not try and basically tell them, like, it's going to be fine. Like, rub it off, brush it off like dirt.
Just don't do it.
Yeah, just don't do it. Just don't think that way. I can't help it. For you, Al, like, in the way that you've experienced anxiety, what do you think has, like, been something that makes you feel like that 5% better at least?
I actually find that question tough to answer, because I don't want to just give the cliche of sometimes it's just time helping me getting over a certain situation. Like, I think for when it came to my postpartum anxiety, I think my son simply getting older and being able to stay awake a little bit longer, or, you know, because his sleep schedule was a big thing for me, that kind of healed itself in a way. So I think when it kind in that scenario, time helped because he slowly got older. I didn't have to worry about awake times as much and stuff like that. He slept through the night consistently. He was an angel sleeper for like the first 3 years of his life. So, well, 2.5, first 6 months was a bit rocky.
Mm-hmm.
But in that case, I didn't have to worry about that at all anymore.
Yeah.
So again, in that moment, it was time. Social anxiety, there was actually a scenario that I didn't get a chance to say before. A lot of it had to do with how I felt about myself.
Yeah.
Physically. Like my appearance. I felt like that affected my social anxiety a lot.
Yeah.
And it was basically the source of it. I remember once I was meant to go meet all of my husband's friends for the first time.
Yeah.
And at this point, we had been together for like a year And it was the first time where he was like all of his friends together. I'd met a lot of them individually, but not all at once. And I, because I was going through my parents' divorce at the time, had gained a lot of weight from emotion eating. What the fuck is
emotional eating? Yeah.
Emotional eating, yeah. Because I can do that very badly. I had no confidence because I knew that when I was getting ready, I felt overweight. I didn't like what I was wearing. Yeah. I didn't like how I looked. And it really affected how I was that night. And it still bothers me to this day that the first time that we all got together in a group, I was like that. I was just really quiet and I had that more paralyzing anxiety that I spoke about before. And it really bothers me to this day. So I think when it comes to my own social anxiety, because a lot of it for some reason had to do with my appearance. Like I just didn't feel comfortable with the way I looked and I just didn't want to be presented to the world that way.
Yeah.
So I feel like what has happened with my social anxiety, the more I worked on myself and focused on myself, the better it got. It wasn't exactly trying to be more social or trying to do this or trying to do that. It was more inner work.
Yeah.
So the more I found things that I enjoyed doing, and at the time I had started doing like my makeup YouTube, and that was a real therapy for me.
Mm.
It gave me the confidence to be able to talk to people more.
Yeah.
I started losing weight. I was working out nearly daily, which really helped.
Yeah, it helps so much on the mind. People do not exercise realize.
Exercise is insane. Insane how much it makes a difference. And there's the bonus of it helping you to lose weight at that point. And I was eating all the right foods. That is actually what got me through my social anxiety. And it can be at a minimal level now, especially because I've got this podcast. It's forced me to be more open with random people that we talk to.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's working on myself made my social anxiety better. It helped diminish it.
I would say the same thing. Like, I feel like there was a time where my social anxiety pretty much ruled every conversation I had all the time, and it made me feel like this small, literally. Yeah,
but yours didn't come from the source of it wasn't your physical appearance. No,
not physical appearance. I was very, I was just petrified of having conversations with people and petrified not even how I'd be perceived, but that I would say something wrong or I would speak too loud or I'd speak too quiet or people would, no one made fun of me as a kid, luckily. But mainly because I didn't say anything for them to make fun of me. And the idea of, I think majority of my anxiety always lives in the what ifs. And my brain is always in the what ifs. But what if they say this about you? What if you say this and then you make a fool of yourself and then you do this? What if this? I would say things at school or as an adult now. And I say things and I walk away from them still thinking about what I said and repeating how I said something in my head over and over and over again. To the point where I almost make myself completely unwell and emotionally exhausted and tired and crying over something that's not even a thing, like over me over analyzing a social situation to that length. And we could talk about body image issues and social anxiety on a whole different scale as well.
That's a whole other episode.
But for me, I found that same as you, working, it was my confidence that I was enough, or my confidence that I was allowed to be myself. And now knowing that a lot of my childhood, I probably was very talkative like I am on this podcast. I probably did want to interrupt everyone every 5 seconds like I do now. But I didn't, because even though I had that within me to want to do that, I didn't, because I knew that if I did that, I'd make a fool of myself essentially. And that wasn't the correct social norm. Obviously, having ADHD now, I understand why I had this urge to interrupt.
That was a good episode. I think so.
All right.
I think we'll end it there.
I think so.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you got something out of this.
Yeah, we just like to talk about our anxiety.
Blab on. We talk a lot of schmack.
Schmack. And honestly, we only scraped the surface, really. We could have gone really deeper, but sometimes there's stuff left for another episode.
Yes. Oh, yes. Can't give up everything in an episode, Elle.
Yes.
Got to spread it across a few episodes. Need you to
come back for more.
Yes. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it so much.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Please don't forget to check out our Patreon
mm-hmm.
and to follow us on all podcast apps.
And rate us a 5 out of 5 if you really like. A 5 out of 5 if you really like what you're listening to. And if you have any other recommendations for episodes, we will always take recommendations on board. So please send us a message.
Oh, yes. Thank you. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.